Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketer's podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-commerce and retail strategy at Quad, and I'm very excited about today's guest, Rebecca Vargas, former CMO of Girl Scouts of America. Rebecca brings 20 years of experience as a senior marketing executive in the banking industry, working for JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, where she was a pioneer in the multicultural marketing in the U.S. Most recently, as CMO for the iconic Girl Scouts brand, Rebecca was a member of the executive leadership team responsible for brand stewardship and full marketing strategy. She led the development of Girl Scouts' renewed brand positioning and a new brand advertising campaign. She also defined and led the execution of a new marketing strategies around membership acquisition, engagement, and retention. And, more importantly, new cookie flavors. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you for the invitation. I am happy to be here with you.
It's great to have you as a big fan, even though I was obviously never a Girl Scout. I do love it, and my daughter was very involved for many years. You've had a tremendous ride. We've got a lot to unpack today. Why don't we start quickly with a little bit of an overview of your time as CMO at Girl Scouts of America?
Sure. Happy to share some thoughts on that. Thank you, Marcus. Yes, my daughter was a Girl Scout. I was not, but my daughter was, my mother-in-law was. So yes, it's definitely an institution that has shaped 50 million women in the U.S., currently close to 1.4 million women. So definitely changes not only girls, but communities. And I was proud to serve as the steward for the brand. Like you said, it's an iconic brand. And what can I tell you? It was an amazing opportunity to shape the way the organization thought about the marketing function. As CMOs, something that I'm sure your audience will agree with me on is that sometimes the marketing function and the CMOs themselves are not necessarily seen as drivers of growth, particularly in the NGO sector. So I was proud to say that I brought to the organization that perspective. I said marketing is here to drive growth. So I reorganized the team to organize ourselves in a fashion that we were ready to drive growth. We also work on a new rebrand, not rebrand, but a new positioning for the organization, not brand. The brand is iconic. The brand identity obviously will remain the same, I hope forever. But I did think that there was an opportunity to, one, reach new segments of the market, and two, to communicate to all consumers what Girl Scouts is really about. If you ask consumers on the street everywhere, what is Girl Scouts? Most people talk about cookies. You mentioned cookies right now. People get excited about cookies, and that's understandable. I also get excited about the cookies. I love eating them. But Girl Scouts is a lot more than just cookie flavors and cookies, right?
Very true.
So I thought there was an opportunity to communicate that to consumers. So we did work on a new positioning, as well as a new brand advertising campaign that is coming soon. And we did it with a new perspective, which I brought to the organization based on my years of experience in multicultural marketing in the banking industry. And that new perspective was basically centered on the idea that the U.S. consumers have evolved. The population and the growth of the population in the U.S. has defined who the key consumers are today. And for Girl Scouts, as well as for the rest of the corporations and NGOs, I believe, in the U.S., there are some segments of the market that are critical if they want to grow. And those segments are, for example, the Hispanic segment, the African-American segment, the Asian segments. Yes. So again, when we worked on developing the new brand positioning and the brand advertising campaign, we did it from the beginning with a multicultural perspective in mind. So those are some of the things that we did. I also worked with my team on the development and marketing of Explore Mores. For your audience and you, in case you haven't tried Explore Mores, which is the new cookie flavor, I invite you to go buy it, to get it. Right now is cookie season, so
it is.
Don't forget about get the Explore Mores. So I had the opportunity during my career, and we'll talk more about that, Marcus, but during my career, I've had the opportunity to work on product development and program development, particularly for the banking industry. I never imagined that in my life I would have the opportunity to work on developing new cookie flavors, but it was very exciting to do so. And as a marketer, obviously, you realize that the basic principles of product development apply to whatever it is, either a cookie flavor or a bank product.
Very interesting, because there are some parallels to the challenges that many of the marketers listening face. Marketing is an investment. Yeah. Rather than an expense. And it sounds like you had some success with that. And that starts with making sure that you're acquiring new customers and you're able to measure and identify that growth. So it sounds like when you came on, you identified the fact that there was a big opportunity to target to segments of the population that maybe Girl Scouts of America hadn't been relevant with of late.
That is right. And I would say, to be fair, I didn't identify that. I think the board had already identified that and had given the instruction or the direction to focus on that. It's just that the organization had not done it or didn't know how to do it. But it was definitely a direction from the board. And I came in and had the opportunity to lead the how to do it, right? And embed multicultural marketing on everything that the marketing function did, which at Girl Scouts, the marketing team both develops the product, develops the program components, the activities that the girls do, as well as the marketing that goes to the consumers, to the girls, the mothers, the volunteers, as well as the communication to the councils. So it was very interesting in the sense that on a daily basis we were doing a little bit of B2B, B2C, or B2C to B2B2C. So very interesting. And yes, we had the opportunity of doing that. But the other aspect of your question has to do with engagement and retention. To drive growth, yes, you need to acquire more customers, but you also need to retain them.
Yes.
And what I found out is that there was a lot of focus on attracting new members, diverse members, because that's a segment of the population where Girl Scouts historically has not been predominant. But besides that, there was no specific effort to retain existing members. And by retain, I mean having constant, relevant, targeted communication to them. All of the engagement and the retention is left to the councils. And they do an amazing job. The councils touch the lives of the girls. They are the ones who really bring the program to life and really acquire them and really provide the experience. But I saw an opportunity from GSUSA to also work on bringing to the organization new know-how in terms of how to manage leads and how to work the leads and how to engage with existing members for purposes of retention.
There's quite a bit to unpack there, and I really like that. I definitely want to talk a little bit about retention, but let's take a step back, if you don't mind. Many of the brands that are listening might be in a situation where they're identifying a market that has been underserved for them. What's the kind of the process, if you will, you go by to identify and reach those segments? I assume that began to a certain extent with the brand and then switched into the actual marketing efforts. But could you walk us through how you approached it?
Yes, you're right. There is a brand component to make sure those segments of the market know about you and you are relevant to them. And then there is obviously the product or program component so that they know specifically about your product and they acquire it. So you're right. And I think it all starts with research, really. Understanding, I am a CMO, a marketer that believes that everything, that the marketing function is the advocate for the consumer. And everything that both the marketing team does, as well as everything that the organization does, should be consumer-centric, customer-centric. And to understand what your consumer needs, you need to understand your consumer. So everything started really with research. For the first time in the history of the organization, we did research across different consumer segments, particularly talking to diverse consumer segments. It starts with understanding how much your consumers know about the brand and what is relevant to them about the brand and the products.
All right, next question in that space is, at what point does the thinking around a singular general marketing strategy stop working? And when do you need to switch to more relevant multicultural marketing messaging to those new segments?
Oh my God, Marcus, that's such an important question. And one that I think we could talk a lot about that, because I'll answer it, but I'll share my thoughts on it. But before I do, I'll tell you, people like me, marketers like me who have been working on multicultural marketing for a couple of decades, I'm dating myself, but a couple of decades, when we started, we had what we called the general market and multicultural marketing or Hispanic marketing or marketing for the LGBTQ or the African American segment, etc. I'm talking 20 years ago, right? And we did that. At least in my case, I presented that to the organization back then, Citigroup. I presented that as an opportunity for growth, right? And the focus, and that was the focus. 20 years later, somehow the thinking is, for some organizations, the thinking is the general market is now the diverse market.
Oh.
So there, and there are plenty of organizations that, for budget purposes, for mostly I would say for budget purposes, they say general market is the same than diverse marketing, multicultural marketing. So we really don't need to do anything for multicultural marketing. What we need to do is to ensure that on the creative that we develop, on the messaging that we develop for the general market, and I'm doing quotes here for the audience that cannot see me, but I'm doing quotes for the general market, we need to make sure that we develop messaging that resonates with all consumers. And there are some organizations who are good at that. Some organizations who have been able to integrate some insights into their creative that work well with our consumers. But the risk of doing that, the risk of what has happened in the last 20 years and evolving from having general market and multicultural versus now a tendency to have general market that incorporates multicultural,
yes.
The risk of doing that is that then organization can miss the opportunity to reach the hearts and minds of specific communities. They have a risk of missing those nuances that can really make the difference. The idea here is that from its inception, from the conception of the new program and subsequently the marketing to promote that program, there is a multicultural component embedded in the strategy.
You know, you talked before about how they try to overlay general multicultural components into general marketing. I guess my question would be, how do you maintain cultural authenticity when you're trying to reach a wide audience? What do you think is the best way to structure?
I honestly think it can work both ways. There are benefits and disadvantages of both scenarios. One benefit of having an integrated team is that you ensure there is a multicultural thinking on everything that the marketing team does. And there is a lot of value on that, because I believe multicultural should be, like I said before, embedded from the beginning in the strategy. The downside of that is that sometimes organizations assume that people understand really what multicultural segments need and understand those insights, consumer insights, and yes, that's not always the case. So in the scenarios where the teams are integrated, my thinking, my opinion or suggestion would be that that can work as long as there is talent that really understands those nuances, understands those consumer insights. And that could be, frankly, more profitable in terms of expenses and management. So I think now if at the top of the house there is a clear direction to invest in multicultural marketing, I think it's fine to have teams that integrate multicultural into the marketing team as long as the talent is there. If at the top of the house there is no clear specific direction, buy-in, investment on multicultural, then I would say you do need a separate specific team to work on that, because in my experience what happens is that if at the top of the house there is no buy-in or desire to invest in this, yes, usually that separated in the team becomes the advocate for it and becomes the group or the individual. I was one of them years ago, who is the advocate and the one who's always fighting for the dollars. So again, what happens at the top of the house also, I think, dictates, in my opinion, the way the team should be structured.
How should success be measured when you're looking at multicultural marketing efforts, you know, beyond short-term metrics? Are there different KPIs, or do the traditional ROAS and LTV numbers still apply?
I think from a marketing perspective, for any marketer who works on multicultural marketing, it's important to make sure that the way the results are measured is a way that is going to be understood by everyone in the organization. Because that's the way you make the case, and that's the way you can prove that these are very profitable audiences, right?
Yes.
So the short answer is, I think the same, similar KPIs, ROI, etc. Having said that, I think there could be, depending on the organization, there could be additional KPIs. For example, when I was leading these efforts at Chase or Citi, I also would look at number of bilingual employees in the branches, right? Let's not forget that the brand is the promise to the consumers. That's what the brand is, right? It's a promise to the consumers, in mm-hmm. my view. And the brand needs to deliver on that promise through the products, services, communications, etc. In the case of the bank, for example, if I was coming up with a brand advertising campaign, upper funnel or through the funnel messaging, and then I was promising something and that promise was not being delivered by the banker at the branch, then that disconnect was not going to work and I was not going to get the ROI that I was looking for, right?
Yes.
And if that campaign was in Spanish, for example, I had to make sure that at the branch, we, the bank, had the employee, the banker, the teller, etc., that spoke the language, so that employee at the branch could communicate to the consumers that we were attracting through that advertising campaign in Spanish. So my point is, those were additional KPIs that I would look at, like number of bilingual employees at the branches or the call centers, etc.
Perfect. How do you see data and AI helping or maybe even hurting multicultural marketing efforts today, especially AI? I'm interested in your experience there.
I don't think it hurts. As I think that in any case, it doesn't hurt. It helps. I don't know what I said, but it definitely does not hurt. I think it helps. And I'll give you an example.
Yes.
Very early on when I started multicultural marketing at Citi and then at Chase, one of the things that I led was the implementation and use of a language of preference indicator. So if you were a bank customer who told us that for whatever reason, even if you're bilingual, you prefer to be served in Spanish because maybe you don't feel good about reading a mortgage contract in English, you would prefer to read it in Spanish. If you told us that Spanish was your language of preference, then the promise or the idea was that we would serve you end-to-end in that language. But my point is, when it comes to AI, I see the opportunity to talk to consumers, for example, in their language of preference. I think that if we trained AI to do that, it could help a lot. It could also identify those who prefer a different language. And if it's trained the right way, it could even pick up on the nuances of the language and talk to consumers in
authentically.
Exactly.
I got it. We're talking before, and I said it on the back burner for a second, about the importance of retention for a brand like Girl Scouts of America. And, you know, what are some of the ways that you worked on that? And I guess a question that probably dovetails with this clearly is navigating the interesting dynamic of being both a business-to-business organization that serves your councils and a business-to-consumer organization that's serving the girls.
Yes. So let me talk a little bit first about the second part of the question, because I think that defines success or failure on the answer to the first part of the question. I think that being able to collaborate and to establish a strong collaboration with the CEOs of the councils and the councils in general is, and that happens, and that's the case of Girl Scouts, but it could also be the case of any franchise organization. A Girl Scouts is not a franchise, but it's a confederated model. But anyway, establishing a strong relationship with the councils, having strong collaboration with the councils is critical, because at the end of the day, like I said before, they are the ones really delivering the experience and touching the lives of the girls on a daily basis. And in their view, they are the ones who have the engagement with the girls, which is true if you use the word engagement from a relationship perspective. How did I develop that better connection with councils? By communicating to the CEOs what the marketing strategy was, by creating additional ways to engage with the CEOs. We created forums. I created four teams to work with council CEOs and their teams. So again, more opportunities to ongoing dialogue, closer dialogue, and open, transparent communication in terms of the marketing strategy for the organization, and being open to listen to their suggestions. I have always believed that the people who touch the lives of the consumer knows more than me as the CMO and my marketing team. And that was the case in banking. I always believed the bankers in the branch knew better than us. And similarly, I believe the volunteers and the employees in the councils know better than GSUSA what the girls need. And then to address your the first part of your question, so that was the second part of the question. And then once you do that, once you have that connection with them, in this case with the councils, the CEOs and their staff, then I think it becomes easier to talk to them about this concept of engagement and retention.
I understand.
And what I did at Girl Scouts was to share with my team, with a broader team within GSUSA and the councils, my experience on how the banks look at leads, which is something that the organization was not doing. My marketing team was developing all these leads, attracting all these leads, generating all these very strong list of leads. And the councils were not working on the leads. And no one was following up on the leads, right? So that's what I brought. This know-how of how the banks do it. The banks also develop leads. They follow up on the leads. The bankers are asked to sell X number of accounts on a daily basis, right? So this notion of following up on the leads is something that I also brought to the organization. And then lastly, I would say the engagement. There are multiple ways in which organizations, and there are thousands of examples how organizations engage with their existing customers, right? Through email, messaging, etc. That is something that the organization doesn't have, and it's in development. And I brought this thinking in terms of the need to engage with consumers besides what the councils do on a daily basis.
So listening to the councils and having them having their voices heard enables you to craft messaging and programs that support LTV and continuing to retain the girls.
Exactly.
Love that. All right, well, let's switch. What a career you've had. I think, if I remember right, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup were three. Big change from financial services to Girl Scouts. Why don't we start to talk about a little bit about your career in the financial services industry and some of the things that you did with those organizations?
Sure. I actually started this accent that your audience hears, Marcus, as you know, is from Mexico, or I was born and raised over there, have been in the U.S. for close to 30 years now, but I was born and raised there. So I actually started my career in banking in Mexico, working for BBVA, Banco Bilbao Vizcaya Argentaria, which at the time was Bancomer. And I had the enormous opportunity of working for someone who led the risk management function. So my first assignment coming out from college was really about how to build a new team and business development, right? After that, I led the development of the Mexican Derivative Exchange before coming to do an MBA in the US. So again, from the beginning, my career, it was about product development, business strategy, etc. And then when I graduated from business school in the US, I joined Citigroup. I joined as an FMA, as a financial management associate, a very junior position, which I have to say was a little bit maybe frustrating or very frustrating for me at the time because I was already a director in Mexico. I had a team reporting to me. I was a member of more or less senior team. And I basically restarted my career in banking in Citi as an associate. But I had an amazing manager, Anthony Delomo, who taught me the value of pausing and learning because I was someone who would say to him, I am here to contribute. I am here to do this, X, Y, Z, and a lot of things. And he would say, Rebecca, breathe, calm down, and learn. Right. So I learned that from Anthony as well as many other things. So I started my career in consumer bank at Citi, and then I did some work in M&A, mergers and acquisitions for the organization, and I had the opportunity of participating in the acquisition of Banamex in Mexico, which at the time was the largest bank in Mexico. And right after the acquisition, I raised my hand, and by raising my hand, I mean I sent an email to the CEO of the consumer bank at the time, a lady by the name of Marge Magner, amazing woman who even to this day continues to be my mentor. And I sent an email to her and I basically said, we just bought this bank in Mexico and the Hispanic segment in the US is growing at the fastest rate. It will become a very important segment of the market. important segment for the growth of the bank, and we are not doing anything for this segment. And now we have this organization across the border that we could leverage to do something specific for this segment of the market. She responded to my email, and that's how my career changed from risk management, M&A, and corporate banking to consumer bank and marketing and product development. So that's how I started doing multicultural marketing, developing new products for the Latino segment and marketing to the Asian segment, Black, African American, LGBTQ, and Hispanic segments. I did that for Citi. We were very successful. And then I got the invitation to move to Chase to do something similar. I built the multicultural segment for them, ran it for some years. When I joined Chase, the multicultural segment was roughly 18% of the new acquisition. By the time I moved to the JP Morgan side of the house, it was close to 27% of the new acquisition, checking acquisition. So it was an amazing ride. And then I got the invitation from the CEO of JP Morgan Latin America to move to his team. I did that, and I ran marketing, communications, and philanthropy for JP Morgan Latin America across 7 or 8 countries. And that's when I got a sense of the philanthropy aspect of the business. I was responsible for all the philanthropic investment in the region. And my kids were young, very young at the time, but they were getting old. I had voices in my family telling me, your kids are getting older, you won't have a chance to see them, they will go to college. Anyway, there was a personal aspect happening at home where I had the desire to spend a little bit more time with my kids. And then also at work, people have changed, etc. So I decided to leave JP Morgan and joined the US-Mexico Foundation. A member of the board of the organization reached out to me. The board invited me to join, and I became the CEO for the US-Mexico Foundation. And that's how I changed from banking to non-for-profit. It was very frustrating and tough in the beginning because I came from the largest
big adjustment.
Exactly. Tough adjustment. But ultimately, I loved it because as the CEO, I had the opportunity to lead to the organization, to shape the future of the organization in partnership with the board. And I had the opportunity to develop new programs. So I had the experience of developing banking products. There, I developed new programs. And I focused a lot on helping Latino youth of Mexican origin in the U.S., and building binational collaboration. So I worked on developing the first programs for dreamers to be able to leave the US, go to Mexico, and come back with a renewed sense of pride in their cultural heritage. And I also developed the first STEM mentoring program for high school girls in Mexico and Latin America. I spoke too much. That was quick, but that's a little bit of my career.
It's a fascinating career, and those last two programs must have been extremely rewarding for you. All right, well, we're about at time. This has been a great interview. Rebecca, first of all, thank you so much for being here. I've got one more question for you. Mm-hmm. If you could tell your younger self one principle that's been essential to your success, what would it be?
One.
You can pick more than one if you need to.
I'll pick a few. First of all, honesty and transparency, which is something that my parents taught me. I think that that's the one principle that I always live by. Honesty, transparency, and acceptance of everyone.
I love that.
And then the second one, I would say, listening. We touched a little bit on that, but listening. I believe that I am a work in progress. I've had some achievements, but I definitely do not know everything, and I have a lot to learn. And you often learn the most just by listening to others. So I would say those are the two most important for me.
I love that, and I totally agree. The minute you stop learning, you're regressing in your career and as a person. So, and there's no better way for you to learn than to have the opportunity to talk to people, which is the reason why I love this podcast and the opportunity to get to know people like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my mother is close to 80, and she's my best example. Every day, every night, at the end of the day, she works on her Duolingo. You had asked me when you and I met, you had asked me what are some of the brands that you appreciate.
Yes.
And I have my list, but Duolingo is definitely one, because I think what they've been able to do to reach all segments of the population from an age perspective, from a diversity perspective, from everything, I find it fascinating. And my mother is an example of that, as well as my 16-year-old son. Every day she sits down and she does her homework and activities and whatever she has to do with Duolingo.
Thank you for that. And the way they gamified learning has been such a spectacular strategy. Thank you so much for being on, Rebecca. This has been a great interview. It's gone a little longer than I usually do, but I've just enjoyed chatting with you so much. Thank you for being on with us.
Thank you, Marcus. I enjoy it too. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us on Directly Speaking today, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the content and getting to know Rebecca a little bit more closely with me. We'd love to have you join us again soon. And until then, keep selling, everybody. Have a great day.